There she goes.
Listeners, welcome back to We Write Songs podcast. We're so glad you're here for another week of inspiration on songwriting, musicality, and being awesome in general. Today we have a really cool interview lined up with Stolen Stars. They are a duo, and they're going to talk to us about being multi-instrumentalists, writing good lyrics. And so if any of that interests you, make sure to hang around, and we're going to get started with today's interview.
Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
We got London and Weston from the Orem, Provo, Utah area, right?
Yep, that's correct. Right. Yeah. Awesome. Absolutely.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourselves and what you guys do.
Okay. Well, we are a musical duo. We tend to play, I would say, pop rock music. And yeah, we've been doing this for about a couple of years now. And yeah, I think that sums us up, right? Yeah.
Okay. So what's your guys' like love story? How did you meet? Not love story. I'm just teasing.
Tinder.
I actually moved into his neighborhood when I was about, I don't know, like 12 or something like that. And then we met, but we weren't actually friends for a couple of years. And then one day we just started actually hanging out. I think he came over because he wanted to mooch off my brother's drum set, something like that. And yeah, then we just started hanging out and just kind of went from there. And we've pretty much been playing music since we met.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I think, since we've been playing music since about 14 years old together. But then we didn't start doing the whole like band duo thing until, you know, a couple years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's how we met. And we've been friends ever since.
It's awesome. It's a beautiful love story.
Thank you.
You gotta make
it. We worked really hard on that love story. So
yeah. I can tell it's a little scripted there.
Yeah.
That's all right. So for each of you individually, what are some of your influences growing up musically?
That's a good question. I would say I grew up listening to a lot of classic rock growing up. I love the Rolling Stones. I love the Beatles. I also really love some of the older pop artists. I really love Michael Jackson. I love Prince. And now some of the modern stuff that we listen to, you know, I love Bourne's, the 1975, there's some Coldplay influences, the Wombats. So those are some of mine. What about you, London?
Well, I mean, honestly, my family wasn't really musical. My dad's pretty much tone deaf and my mom would mostly just listen to pop.
It's true. His dad is, oh my gosh. It's like unbelievable, but it's funny.
Yeah. Around when I started junior high, that's kind of when I started getting into music, and I actually started off with like pop R&B, and I was in choir a couple of times as a kid too. So that's kind of where I learned to sing. I had a really good choir teacher in fifth grade, I think it was. But in high school, I really started to get into music, and I listened to a lot of indie rock, indie pop stuff. And mm-hmm. I'd say, like, as far as writing music, that's where most of my influence comes from.
Yeah. So I think we, because of our variety and how much music we like, has really influenced our songwriting, and I feel like has really propelled us at a really good level of, you know, where to be, you know, when you decide to do songwriting. Yeah. So,
well, let's talk about that, the songwriting aspect real quick. I know, London, you said you like doing lyrics, right?
Yeah.
Kind of your strong your strength, I guess. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that. What are some of the techniques you use, or just different things you do to prepare and accomplish your strong lyric writing?
Okay. Yeah. So I think for most of my songs, not all of them, but most of them, I actually just start off with the lyrics, and I kind of just write a poem and then put music to it later. Mm-hmm. And for me, something I just love in writing lyrics and poetry is finding rhythm in words. So, I mean, you'll recognize it in a lot of poems that go, ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da, like rhythm like that in words. I don't know. I love writing stuff like that. Like, you'll hear it in like Dr. Seuss and things like that. And yeah. I like actually putting rhymes to my poems and stuff. And I don't know. It's one of our songs right now. It's one of our top songs. It's called The Everwood Waltz. I wrote the lyrics for that one. That's one of the songs I'm most proud of. Just, I don't know. Even though I wrote them, I do think the lyrics are beautiful.
Yeah, that's an awesome song.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think a lot of when we were writing that song, I think we were kind of thinking about, you know, the old barbershop quartets. Uh-huh. And kind of giving it that kind of a feel when, you know, with the harmonies and everything that we wrote with that song. I think we kind of, that song definitely draws a lot of influence from those old bluegrass, you know, barbershop quartet type of things. So,
yeah, but it's your style too, like mm-hmm. Stolen Stars style. Triple S,
baby.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. I like that you take pride in your lyrics, especially for that song. That's a really well-written song.
Yeah, and, thank you.
Yeah. And then, Weston, we talked to you about instrumentals and kind of putting things together and musically, right?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So, basically, I think, you know, my process in, you know, creating music is, you know, everything is sort of based on feeling and literally with everything. So I'll start with, you know, if I get lyrics to a song, I, you know, obviously I'm going to read those. I'm going to go, okay, this is the feeling that, you know, I want to get from this song. What kind of sounds capture that feeling in the best way possible? And so it's a lot of experimenting. It's a lot of me just going through instruments and sounds and then finding something that really, really works, you know. And the thing about writing music is you like to listen to what you're writing to, you're writing, you know. And if you find that right sound, it's, you know, you're like, I got it. This is it. And then it doesn't tend to change from what it is, you know. And I think a lot of that comes from, you know, my background in, you know, playing with orchestras and, you know, wind symphonies and just getting a good feel for what, you know, every instrument has to offer, you know. And I honestly, I recommend that people listen to a lot of classical music and a lot of, you know, orchestral stuff, because I think that's what really, you know, helps create that full sound when you're writing music, mm-hmm. Is having that knowledge and that background. So yeah, I would say, obviously you have to know how to, I mean, I only play like four instruments essentially, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But
I only,
you
play
know,
four instruments.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Look at me, everybody. All right. Yeah. So that's kind of my process, is everything is sort of based on feeling. And a lot of it is just experimenting. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think a lot of people, you know, when they're writing songs, they have like this specific, you know, thing that they want it to sound like. And it's just not realistic. And I think what you really have to do is let the song breathe and, you know, kind of let it take you where it wants to go.
Yeah.
So
I like what you said about the classical music. Marissa and I were kind of talking about this the other day with like soundtrack music and music with no words, and how it's based on like emotion and feeling and like you feel a certain way during certain parts of the song, and it's letting the music take you places without words. And yeah. I think that that's a really, really cool concept.
Exactly.
That you can apply to any genre, really.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to add one of Weston's musical influences is definitely like scores and soundtracks. He has shown me a lot of those and gotten excited about a lot of those. And I mean, it's exactly what you said. I don't know if you've ever seen like on YouTube, sometimes people will take a movie scene and they'll remove the score and it just is really awkward without the music guiding your emotions.
Yeah.
I mean, scores and soundtracks, they're all about emotions. So.
Yeah. So honestly, I think if anybody, you know, if I were to give advice to anybody about songwriting, I'd be like, go listen to, you know, Beethoven, Mozart, even some of the old Baroque time period pieces like Bach, you know, because those guys were the masters of capturing emotion and feeling. And I think, you know, I mean, you know, when you combine those feelings with the right lyrics, then you're creating like, honestly, the perfect song. So, I would say that's like my process is just really focusing heavily on what you want this to feel like and how am I going to get that feeling.
I love that. I'm classically trained as well. And like I was classically trained in college. And I feel like I have a really good attention to detail because of it, which is nice. You guys probably can relate to that. But yeah, it is pretty cool, especially even if you go like I would one up you and say, don't just go listen to a soundtrack or symphony, but go out and watch what it looks like, because you see all of the instruments that combine to make a sound that you would never think. And you see people, you know, I've played all sorts of weird things because I'm a percussionist. I've hit a gong and stuck it in water to create a weird sound. I've, you know, gotten metal sheets and wiggled them around and
For the thunder and lightning effect.
All sorts of weird stuff that you like wouldn't pick up on unless you're watching it. So I love that idea too. And relating back to like I guess pop music, do you feel like you layer a lot of different instruments into your music, or do you kind of keep it simple? Drums, bass, guitar, vocals?
So that's a good question. It depends on the song, really. You know what I mean?
I mean, I'd say what we usually try to do is we layer as much as we can until we're just like, oh no, that's bad. And then we stop.
Yeah.
We usually keep adding layer. Like we usually add as much as we can whilst keeping it sounding good. And
I think I don't know.
It's a lot of fun doing that, actually.
Yeah, you always reach a point where you're like, yeah, okay, this is just getting too much. Let's dial it back down. Because you just get so excited about what you're writing that you're like, well, what if we did this? And what if we did that? And you know, and then eventually, okay, like it's not working. But you can tell when it's not working, you know? If something like when you're writing a song and something just isn't quite right, you've got to take a step back. So, and we've done that quite a few times and there's nothing wrong with that, you know? Sometimes you're just like not in the greatest creative headspace, but, you know, so you always have to take a step back sometimes.
But yeah, like Everwood Waltz, when we were writing that, there's a lot of vocal layering in that song, and doing that was a lot of fun because we'd record like the bass melody and then we'd add on a harmony, then we'd add on another one, then we'd add on another one, and we'd just keep adding until we're like, okay, this last one isn't doing anything for us. Let's get rid of that one and call it good.
Yep. Yep.
So something I'm super curious about is how you guys translate that into your live performance setting, because obviously there's only two of you and you can only do so much. So how do you kind of keep that really full sound when you're performing in a live setting?
Backing tracks. You know, I think, you know, we've tried to do the full band thing before. We've tried playing with, maybe we haven't tried hard enough. But I know we have tried to dabble our feet into playing with other musicians, and it's just so hard, you know, it's so hard finding that chemistry and that balance, and there's, you know, the scheduling and, you know, and not only that, but I think it's what makes, you know, our, you know, band special, I think, is our duo, is that me and London have been, you know, best friends for such a long time. And I think you can kind of see that and feel that in our music. Like, you can feel the bond and the friendship, and it's just hard to find that with other people. So
too many ideas. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. And that too, you know, I think a lot of people have so many ideas, and so we just kind of gave up on it and just kind of decided, okay, if we're going to do this duo thing, we need to have a full sound. How can we do that? And then we just do backing tracks, you know, our drums, and basically our drums and like some of the synth sounds are backing tracks. And then we're playing a lot of live instruments on stage.
Right. So even though we use backing tracks, we know that can look boring sometimes. And so we've worked really hard to put together a show that's still really engaging and exciting because it's just the two of us. So, I mean, sometimes in the middle of songs, you'll see us switching instruments and stuff. And we've worked really hard to make that a smooth process. And I think we've got it down. And it's actually a lot of fun because people come up to us afterwards and they're like, whoa, that was crazy that wall of sound was just the two of you working everything. And because we're switching instruments, they can tell that we put a lot of work into it, and it doesn't feel like the audience is getting ripped off because we're using backing tracks. And yeah, we work really hard to not just make it us playing our songs in front of people, and to make it more of a entertaining performance that's really engaging and exciting for the audience. And it's been hard work getting to that point, but I think we're finally to a point where we're pretty comfortable with how that performance is.
So you guys are essentially like the Chainsmokers, but musically talented.
Ooh.
Ooh.
I just wanted to throw it out there. I don't really mean it.
Yeah.
But I have seen, I actually saw them live and I didn't even know who they were at the time, but there's like one dude, like a
weirdo.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? I met him. Like, I had a friend that's like, hey, I got tickets to go see the Chainsmokers. Cool. And then we had like backstage passes, and like, I have like a picture where I got my arm around one of them, and I don't even know who they were at the time. I didn't even recognize any of their songs when they played them, but then I started listening to them, and then I'm like, whoa, they're big. But it kind of reminded me of what you were talking about, like because there's just the two of them, and they don't have any instruments on stage, at least the time I saw them. They just have like their live audio workstation, and
they have like
and then the one dude will sing closer, and that's about it. and he's just kind of dancing.
Dee, 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 dee. Yeah. I can play 4 or 5 notes. Doo, doo, doo,
but it kind of reminded me of that. But
yeah,
if you bring in the switching instruments component into that, I mean, it's so much more engaging and interesting.
For sure.
Right.
Yeah. And we definitely try to separate ourselves, you know, from a classic duo like that by adding in the live instruments. Really cool. So
I can very much see just two people in the band being a really big handicap, but instead we've worked really hard to just turn it around into an advantage. And I think it's worked out, and it's been a lot of fun.
It was hard at first though. I think, you know, getting everything. I mean, if you are going to go the duo route and you're going to go kind of the route we're going, it's definitely not as easy. I think sometimes it's just, I don't know. There's benefits to both. I think when you have four people, it's just really convenient to not have to get all this backing track, you know, stuff together. But
then you don't have as many people you got to pay.
But yeah,
I was just gonna say, make a little more money.
Yeah,
you have to work hard.
Yeah,
though.
Well, yeah.
But I mean, we both have to do more work too, though.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, it's hard at first because, you know, it's kind of it almost feels like a risk because of how it can be complicated. So many things can go wrong with backing tracks. You know, like them not having the right equipment to play your backing tracks, or, you know, you sometimes like at first we were running backing tracks through our computer, and my computer would like crap out, you know? And so, you know, there was a lot of issues at first, but then we finally got to a point where we actually, well, this is very interesting. So we actually bought a sample pad or just a drum pad, and then we started running our backing tracks through that, and that changed the game for us. And that's what makes it easy now, is just like hitting the pad and, you know, and the backing tracks play. But I think if anybody was going to do backing tracks, I would recommend doing it through, you know, a sample pad, you know, rather than trying to run it through, you know, a program like Ableton or
Mainstage.
That's what, yeah, I would say.
I mean, we got to a point where there were too many variables that were out of our hands every time we played, too much that could go wrong that we couldn't really control. So we sat down and basically just redid our entire stage setup, redid our entire performance, and our main goal was just making sure that everything, as much as we could put into our hands, was in our control. And yeah,
that's awesome.
It's worked. It's been great.
It seems like one thing that came to mind when you were talking about that is like, if you messed up on stage, the backing track kind of keeps going, and the backing track can't really improvise with you, whereas like a band could. So yeah, you really have to tighten up everything for a live show.
Yeah, definitely. I tend to be pretty nitpicky about, you know, musicality and, you know, technique and rhythm. So it's pretty tight on stage. But you know, that just comes with a lot of practice and a lot of hard work.
That's
so
good.
So can you kind of walk me through process? If I'm maybe a solo act or maybe a duo, and I'm hearing you talk about this backing track thing, but I don't even know where to start. Maybe just break down a few steps for people that might be interested in looking into that, or how you guys kind of figured that out, and what that process looks like when you set up for a show.
Yeah, sure. So I'll tell you how we do it now, because it's the best way we've done it. So with every single song, first we focus on recording everything. And then if we don't plan to release the song yet and we just want to play it live, we don't worry about recording vocals or whatever instruments we're going to be playing live. But we record everything else that we want to be there while we're playing our instruments and singing. And so once we have those tracks all set up, we have a drum pad. It's called a Roland SPD-1 Wave. And it's especially meant for playing tracks or playing basically audio files. And so we use that, and it's been a lifesaver just because it is extremely reliable. You don't have to worry about it. I mean, you can throw it around. It's really rugged. Unlike a laptop where it's kind of worrisome having that on a stand on stage where it could just fall over. You can put your tracks onto that pad, and then we also, that pad has two outputs, one that we'll send to the house for them to put into their speakers and everything, and the other one that we put into a little box we have that is actually a in-ear audio system. And into that little box, we broadcast it to little headphones we have that play us the metronome as we're playing. And that helps us keep on time while we're playing with the backing tracks, so that, I mean, sometimes on stage, it's really hard to hear things. There's a lot going on. So it's easy to fall out of tempo sometimes if you get distracted. And so having that metronome in your ears keeps you in line with the backing track, because like Mitch said, if we mess up, like the backing tracks keep going. It's not like you're playing with a full band where you can kind of adjust and feel everybody else and slow down if everyone needs to slow down just a tiny bit or whatever. It's very tight. And so having in-ear monitors mixed with those backing tracks, it makes all the difference. So, I mean, yeah, that's pretty much it. Record, put them on your pedal, have some kind of in-ear system to feed yourself your metronome. And then, yeah, you can just pretty much play from there, and it works pretty flawlessly.
Thanks, guys. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool. So for the listeners out there, where can we find your music And when are you like, when's your next shows? Do you guys go on tour? Like, what do you guys have coming up in the future?
Oh man. Okay. So first off, you can find us on all streaming media platforms. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Google Play, you know, whatever floats your boat, you know, SoundCloud. So yeah, there's all of that. Right now we are currently recording our next single, which we hope to release, you know, in the coming months. But as far as shows go, there's honestly not a lot going on right now. Probably going to start picking up shows in January and February. So right. I think we're going to be kind of laying low for the next couple of months. Definitely stay tuned for any upcoming shows that we have going on.
And I'd also like to add, we're also releasing our music video soon for one of our songs called Get It, Got It. That should be out pretty soon, the next couple of weeks, and we're really excited about that. And if you want to know more info about us, we have our website, stolenstars.com. From there, you can access all our social media. You can listen to our videos, songs. You can see everything's the there. So it's,
yeah.
It's a good place to branch out.
Oh, we also just just set up our merch store online as well.
Go buy merch.
Woohoo.
You guys have a really cool logo. I did want to add that.
Oh, thank you.
I like that.
Yeah. Thank you. That was London. London tends to.
Yeah, I'm actually a graphic designer for work. So.
Oh, nice.
I do most of the designs and the website for our band.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's a redneck driving down the road.
All right, everybody. Well, we hope that you learned something new today from the band Stolen Stars. Make sure to check out their website. You can find all the things there, stolenstars.com. And we appreciate you guys for being on the show. Thank you so much, and goodbye.
Thank you.
Thanks. See you later. See ya. Bye.